Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Lepotovin Investment Outlook 2017 conference call. I would now like to turn the call over to David Lepotovin. Please go ahead, Mr. Lepotovin.
Thanks, operator. Welcome, everyone, to the first conference call of 2017. And it's quicker. We were actually on the last conference call on November 17th, so a faster turnaround. But the markets have changed dramatically since our last call, so I thought it'd be a good time to talk about it and then maybe talk about where we are now and maybe what it looks like for 2017 calendar year. So our last conference call was right after the election. Markets were, if you can recall, terribly worried about the possibility of a Trump victory. The consensus seemed to be amongst the experts that there would be a media 10 to 20% pullback if Trump had won. The good news is we didn't buy into that thesis. In fact, our tea leaves were showing, you know, without taking the emotion out of the election away, but our tea leaves were showing, in fact, that the market was actually poised to pop higher. So we positioned ourselves that no matter who won the election, the markets looked like a pretty good place to be. So since that election time, which is less than 2 months back, the Standard & Poor's 500 index, which is the 500 largest traded stocks in the United States, is up 6.5%. The Dow Jones, which is the 30 biggest, is up 7%. And the Russell 2000 index, which is the small to mid-cap stocks, have risen just shy of 15%, which is quite a stunning move in just 2 months. At the time, the investor sentiment was very, very bearish. In other words, people were sitting on high amounts of cash and people were very nervous about stocks. If we fast forward to where we are today in early January, that has changed and the market has gone up a lot in a very short period of time. Investor sentiment has reversed. In other words, the average guy on the street is very optimistic on stocks, which is quite curious because the worry about Trump has turned into the love affair of Trump. We talked about in the last conference call, I said it wouldn't be all negative. There was positives to Trump in terms of lower taxes and lower corporations and less regulation. And the market was only focusing on the negative. The issue now is we seem to be only focusing on the positives, and let's remember that there are negatives. Protectionism, trade wars, none of those are going to really play out well with the stock markets. I watched that conference call, his first conference call as quote president, although he hasn't been inaugurated yet, but was very shy on specifics, and the whole call seemed to be about do you have any ties to the Russian mafia and a lot less on economics. So there wasn't a lot there. I think the market is maybe a little bit ahead of itself. If we look back at the Reagan rally, there was a powerful rally under Ronald Reagan, and that sort of started to roll over right about the time of inauguration. So we're very close to inauguration, and you know, it's possible that we get the same kind of reaction in stocks. Now, let's be clear. Our thesis for the last several years had been the one, and I've used this cliche, but the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry, which means that if we're going out for dinner and everything's in the laundry, you got to pick the cleanest one. And capital is the same way. It's got to pick a home. So people say, I don't like this, I don't like that. Well, cash is an investment decision, and cash looks very, very unattractive on a global perspective. Bonds look even more unappealing, and therefore that leaves the de facto last one is stocks. So, but that being said, we're not... The tea leaves are not setting up to like, oh my God, this is like 2007, 2008. We're about to hit a major 30 to 40% correction in stocks because those are associated with recessions. There is not a recession on the horizon for 2017. But that being said, this is a market that is not worried about anything. And when there's a lot of worry, I stop worrying. And when there's nothing to worry about, I start worrying. Markets are too high when there's nothing to worry about. Let's remember that it was only 1 year ago that we started going down quite rapidly in stocks, and that was based on the Shanghai Index, and all of a sudden everybody started to worry greatly about China. Let's also remember that we had a correction last January, but we also had a correction in the late summer, early fall of the year before. So we've had two China corrections. And just to go back a year, the Shanghai Index was down 25% early in the year of 2016. And the consensus was that the China bubble was collapsing. These fears spilled over into global stocks with the U.S. Standard & Poor's down 11%. Crude oil had dropped 30%, and the Canadian dollar had dropped to 67 cents. It's a pretty good buying opportunity at the time because markets were a little ahead of themselves. U.S. banks, since that time, have rallied 64% in just less than 1 year. And even Canadian banks up 44%. Very interesting. I would point out, though, that I think that there's a high possibility that there's a 2017 China correction coming. And we've saw a lot of problems. It's interesting that the markets don't seem to be worried about it. Maybe it's the boy that cried wolf. But there seems to be a lot of problems within China in the last week. And those pressures are coming from severe capital outflows. And I want to talk to you something that global currency traders talk about, and they call it the impossible trinity. And the impossible trinity of foreign exchange is something that we've seen many times before. We saw it in the Mexican peso in 94, the Thai baht of 97, and Argentina in 1998. And the possible trinity is that no currency in the world can withstand for long periods of time these three things, which is a fixed exchange rate, or what they call a currency peg, free capital flows, and a completely independent monetary policy where they're setting their own interest rates. And it's interesting that China had been attempting to create this impossible trinity, and that seems to be a problem all of a sudden because the capital outflows are so severe that it is causing severe pain on the Chinese economy. And, you know, if we look at it from a perspective of the capital flows themselves, the China is probably much greater than this, but official foreign reserves were about $4.3 trillion, and now in U.S. dollars reported, and now they're down below $3 trillion. So and the Chinese government doesn't seem content on having them fall any further. So the response of China now is to take one of those three things that I talked about, the fixed exchange rate, free capital flow, and independent monetary policy. And they are now in the process of full lockdown. And we talked about this in my conference calls over the last year, that China would likely have to devalue their currency. Here's the problem. Donald Trump, as he talks about China, he views China as a currency manipulator. So his view was that the Chinese currency has already been manipulated too low. The problem is actually the opposite. The Chinese currency, as far as they're concerned, is way too high. And they need a currency devaluation, but they don't want to go through a trade war. So they're resorting to a full lockdown of, so removing the free capital flow. And even in the last week, we saw a new policy where, as most Canadians know, the Chinese are allowed to bring 50,000 out per year. They've now, in the last week, made it against the law in China to use that 50,000 for the purchase of foreign property. And ironically, that was encouraged before. If we look at why there's so much pressure on the downward pressure on the Chinese and why there's so much capital outflow, imagine a game of Monopoly. In the game of Monopoly, there's a fixed money supply at the beginning of the game. Each player gets $1,500. And at the beginning of the game, money is scarce. It's hard to buy a property. The property costs St. James Place, $180. Well, it's hard to get the money. So then people start passing go, and the money supply starts going up. You pass go, you get $200. You land on free parking, you get more money. All of a sudden, the money supply is going up. At the end of the game, Mark, I'll give you $1,000 for that property. Game keeps going. All of a sudden, it's $2,000. That's inflation. That's more money supply. The property has the same intrinsic value, but the money's been diluted, so there's more money. The U.S. money supply has been ballooning. We were just looking this morning, M2 money supply in the United States, which is a measure of money, is $13.8 trillion. Chinese money supply is $22 trillion. So they've got more money than almost double the money that the entire U.S. with half the GDP, which is unbelievable. So imagine when you create more money, you're going to create wealth, but you're going to devalue the wealth. So imagine Canada doubles its money supply. Eventually what happens is the cost of everything doubles. You can't create wealth out of printing money. Otherwise, Argentina would have had no crisis. You would have just created wealth. So when you're printing money, you're going to then have a commensurate increase in prices because you're not. But so what they've done is they've got a fixed peg rate. So they're printing this money, devaluing the currency, but then trying to hold a fixed exchange rate against the United States. This cannot hold. And so we're seeing in much more pressure. And ironically, you know, China has attempted on three or four occasions to tighten up on this massive money supply growth. And each time they do it, the property market suffers, capital markets start deteriorating, you get everyone looks, hey, China's blowing up, and they turn on the spigots and you get Shanghai prices are up 30, 40, 50% in real estate again. So they're creating this bubble that is very close to possibly coming to a close. So that's a potential concern. Again, it's very difficult to predict corrections in the stock market. So what we are doing with accounts is just getting a little bit more defensive. Last year we were a little bit more defensive at this time, and it allowed us, you know, one of the reasons we again beat a lot of our indexes is because we do this on periodically, and when there is a correction, you get some unbelievable bargains as we did last year. So a little bit more defensive, you may not get it. Again, capital flows, bonds and cash look very unappealing, so capital, in the absence of something to wake up and worry about, capital will continue to flow to stocks. But we are vulnerable to waking up to some bad news. So I would say that you know, the outlook for 2017 is not as good as it was in the last few years. There's a high probability that at some point, whether it's April or May or whenever, that we're going to have a pullback of 10%, and you probably then finish the year with a rally like we did, you know, last year. Last year we had a correction. Clients did very, very well last year. Most accounts well north of the 10% benchmark, what I call benchmark level. But this year we'll probably see some kind of a problem mid-year. I mean, I always say, what can you take to the bank? Well, what you can take to the bank is the difference is we've been sitting with depression-era interest rates since 2009 on a global level. And the United States will lead the world, as they did in December, with the first rate increase. And there'll be more to come. And that's the game changer. How fast do they go up? And how fast is the U.S. economy growing? The greatest danger for stocks is the U.S. economy begins to really accelerate. And that sounds counterintuitive, but if the U.S., all U.S. recessions are preceded by a sharp run-up of interest rates. And if the U.S. begins to raise rates rapidly, we will get defensive rapidly. If they go very, very slowly, stocks are going to do better. And so it's very hard for me to give a year-end prediction than it is normally, because we have to monitor the Fed. If it's slow, it's going to be a good year. If it's rapid raising of interest rates, it's going to be a more challenging year. I would say the Fed's going to be U.S. Federal Reserve that sets interest rate policy will be slower than most likely slower because they're worried about China. They're worried about emerging markets and blowing up other economies. So where are there really interesting opportunities? Well, ironically, I would say that the area that I'm quite excited about right now is in Canada. And it's not that I'm bullish of Canada as a general economy. It's not that I'm, I've reversed my views on the Canadian real estate bubble. It's the fact that preferred stocks in Canada have lagged badly the U.S. preferreds. And if you look at an example, we own a lot of Morgan Stanley preferred stocks. And those Morgan Stanley preferred shares were issued at $25. And we bought them for clients 18, 19, and 20 bucks. And they had yields north of 5% in a very low interest rate environment. And they were also floating. So any prospect for higher rates, eventually, there was a floor. So eventually they were going to possibly see some dividend increases. Well, those preferreds now are trading north of 23 bucks. Now they're not terribly a bargain, but they still yield pretty good. So they're okay. Canadian preferreds during that time have actually mostly gone down, and there's a subsection of the Canadian preferred market called the fixed floaters. And these preferreds did horribly between when they were began to be issued in 2009, 2010, and up until about a year ago. And these preferred stocks were based on floating rates, so as rates went down, the dividends were cut on these issues. But now, at some huge discounts to par, we are finding unbelievable bargains, and a little bit of rate increase is going to send these preferreds way up in value. So we're looking at issues for many of our clients like TransCanada Pipeline, like Enbridge, like Shaw, like Bell Canada. Okay? And Aaron is my expert on that. Aaron, am I missing any of the big ones? I mean, there's Sun Life that we've been buying. And so each client, hopefully, we've been buying, if they're balanced, if their mandate is balanced, medium risk, we've been buying these issues. And I'll just shine an example on the Bell Canadas, and they're not necessarily the best of the lot, but just as an example. So Bell Canada issued at par some preferreds that would pay the prime lending rate. Now, prime lending rate in Canada is a much better investment than the T-bill rate, because prime is what the banks charge their best customers. And banks are in the business of making money. So they charge more for lending money than depositing money. That's how banks make money. So when you can invest at the rate that the banks are lending money, you've got a pretty good deal. But the problem was the prime rate went down to levels never seen in the history of all of Canada prime got down to 2.75. Nobody wanted to buy a preferred stock yielding only 2.75. Well, guess what? Prime has now inched a little bit higher. And now you can buy these Bell Canada preferreds around $16. So $16 represents 160% of the prime lending rate. So at 160% of the prime lending rate, prime goes up 1%, you get 1.6% dividend increase. So as I mentioned, when we started buying Morgan Stanley, I thought the preferreds would go inch back towards their par value. There's a little bit of room left in them. I think these Bell Canadas may not hit par for a long, long, long time, but buying them 16, I think even today they're worth 20 bucks. Or TransCanada that we've been buying at 12 and 13, I think they're worth 14 and 15 or $16. So I think that there are opportunities to make money. We're always looking for a bull market somewhere, an area from risk reward. I'm not saying that there isn't U.S. stock opportunities, but they're not as plentiful as they were even a year ago. In terms of currency, we are at the seasonal strong period of the Canadian dollar, which is the end of December to the end of April. Ironically, historically, it peaks around April 30th. The Canadian dollar last year peaked at 80.35 on April 30th. Then I think we go lower. The risk of being overly bullish of the Canadian dollar is that if I'm right and we have a 2017 China correction, the Canadian dollar goes down with the Chinese Shanghai index, and it is, there is a correlation between China's stocks and the Canadian dollar. So it's risky going too high in Canada, but again, I'm not too worried about being in the Canadian dollar because we think preferreds in this sector are 20 to 30% at least undervalued. So let's not worry about whether we make 2 or 3 cents up or down if we've got something that's trading at a really good bargain. So that's it. I'm sorry that I'm not all that excited about this year. Let's be clear. I'm not all that negative either. I just think it could be a year that we're not going to make double digits. But it's a hell of a lot better than bonds, GICs, and cash. So I think we stay the course, and we got to be proactive, which means that we're busy. Aaron and Susanna, my traders on the Canadian and U.S. side, are busy, and we're looking for stuff every day. We never know what we're going to get, and Aaron came in a couple days ago and said, I don't know who was selling, but we got $1 million of Bell Canada preferred. Great. So that's what we're up to. So I've talked long enough. Operator, if we could get some questions, I'll take a few, and then we'll sign off.
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and you may always cancel your question by pressing the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participants register. Thank you for your patience. And the first question is from Ron Wasik. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good morning, David.
Hi, Ron.
Question for you. You haven't mentioned Europe. There's a lot of turmoil in Europe, and do you think that'll have any impact?
Good question, Ron. I think that China is the headline, just as Europe was 2011, 2012. I think the bad news is kind of in Europe. I don't know. I think Europe's actually getting quite interesting in terms of they've devalued their currency. There's a lot of similarities between Europe today and where the U.S. was a few years ago. We've been adding to stocks like Unilever and Vodafone, which, Vodafone has a dividend yield north of 6%. The British pound has been devalued far more than the euro. I think it's getting to be increasingly interesting from an investment thesis. And yes, the headlines are negative, but negative headlines are not necessarily bad entry points for stocks. Again, one of the things I mentioned is I'm worried that there's not enough negative headlines.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good question, Ron.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. The next question is from Rick Leader. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hey, Rick.
Hi. So, as you know, I haven't been too bullish on Canada, but after listening to you and what I've been following on my own, I think you're right in that respect. I'm a little worried about the States. Maybe not so much what will happen, what will happen. I guess if you want to go over the last 50 years, who's the most likeliest president to get assassinated? It's Trump. and if that happens, I think there could be a 50% chance of that happening. And if that happens, then the market, I'm sure, is going to take a huge dump in the States. So I think switching some stuff, maybe taking a little more advantage in Canada makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've ever had such a hated president. I can't remember a time. I mean, I'm not a big supporter of center-left politics in terms of Obama, but God, the guy's a good speaker, and I like the guy. Like, I like him. Trump's just, and who knows what he's going to say. Like I said, the press conference versus Obama's conferences, it was all about, are you involved with Russian mafia? And this is the president of the United States. It's a good point, Rick. I mean, but I'm not sure an assassination would make the markets go down for more than a day, because I'm not sure the markets wouldn't celebrate him being assassinated.
Well, that's what I'm wondering too. Like, the thing is, he disses everybody. I mean, even the CIA. These are the guys that are supposed to be protecting. What's it take them to turn and look the other way for 2 minutes?
Well, I mean, if you watch the movie JFK, you don't think Lee Harvey Oswald assassinated Kennedy, do you?
Well, no, I agree with you. But no, okay, if that was my other question, if something did happen, do you think that would, because all this seems to be bullish on all this money he's going to spend on development and this and that, and if that turned around, would that, you know, just like
so, Rick,
the plant that they can.
Absolutely. So here's my point. When you wake up one day and there's like negative news, like Greece is blowing up for the third time, and the Dow says ho-hum, ho-hum, and closes up 100 points. You know you are at rock bottom. The markets right now are vulnerable to wake up to some negative news, and it could be just what you said. It could be China. It could be, you know, a whole host of things, which means, like I said, other than the fact there's nowhere to put your money, you know, the other side of the equation, it's possible we could see another 20% in the market. It's possible, okay? And I say that because in the late 90s, as U.S. began to raise rates, the U.S. dollar began to surge higher. And the world said, you know what? I don't want to be in emerging markets. I don't want to be in anything but the United States in the late 90s. And the Fed, as Thai baht devalued and Russia and Argentina, the Fed was going to raise rates, but they went slower. And all you did was foster a stock bubble because everybody went into U.S. dollars, but then they didn't know what to do with their U.S. dollars, so they bought stocks. So you're into this weird part where global flows under rising U.S. rates. I mean, it may foster a bubble, which I don't want to see another bubble in my career because clients are pissed off because I'm not owning the hot flying stocks. And I don't like bubbles. I don't buy stocks that are grossly overvalued. But anyway, we'll see. Rick, it's a good point. They're all rich. So Canada, there's some interesting opportunities. We are taking advantage of that. I think there's a good chance we're double digit, well into double digit returns, and that's one sector. So we'll find a bull market somewhere.
All right. No, I appreciate it. I think you've done excellent for everybody once again this year. So, carry on.
All right. We'll do our best.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Once again, please press star one on your telephone keypad if you have a question. And we have a question from Mr. Horvat. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, David.
Hi, Adam.
Can you talk a little bit about gold?
Yeah. I mean, we always get a gold question. I said in the November conference that I was best neutral on gold, and then we went and bought some gold in December for clients. Because the stocks themselves, I'm always looking for bargains, had really gotten beaten up. So we went in again. We went in last year and we did very, very well. And so we went in again. I think gold represents once again something that if it doesn't do well, great, because that means I'm probably doing well on my stocks, but I like a little bit of it in the portfolios again to be the, well, what if? You know, what if Rick Leader's assassination, you know, worry comes true? What if, you know, China? That because we're in full currency lockdown in China, like it's getting, they're even like banning, like, you know, luxury car exports because there are people who are buying cars and exporting them and all kinds of ways of getting your money out. The one thing it's very hard to control is an underground economy on gold. The Chinese currency needs to be devalued, and the Chinese can buy gold. So it's hard to be too negative on gold. In the absence of a strong U.S. economy and rising rates, gold doesn't do well. But boy, it can pop quickly under any kind of any kind of crisis. So I don't mind a few percentage of people's portfolio in gold. Hope that answers your question. I'm not giving you a real year-end target.
I just wonder.
I don't think there's a lot of downside in it.
Yeah, it seemed to be fairly low, and it's a safe haven in stormy days.
Yes. Couldn't agree more. Yep.
Thanks.
Okay, maybe one more question, operator, and we'll go from there.
Thank you. The next question is from Mr. Blackburn. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Okay.
Mr. Blackburn, your line is now open. You may proceed with your question.
Maybe not there anymore. Getting bored. Maybe the next question then.
Definitely. The next question is from Christian Vanderhoek. Please go ahead. Your line is open, sir.
Hi, David. Quick question.
Hi.
I thought I heard you mention that you had reversed your views on the Canadian real estate bubble in your opening segment. Do you care to elaborate? Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Happy to. No, I said, let's be clear. I haven't reversed my views on the Canadian real estate bubble. Misheard. Let's for the record, say that, no, I have not reversed my views. A lot of that has to do, as we all know, with the capital flows from China. So it'll be very interesting, as I said, on real estate, especially there's a lot of money laundering going on in Toronto from all places in the world, but we know what's driving the bus in Vancouver. The 15 on one side of the ocean over here, we don't want their money, and on the other side, they want it out. But the government is quadrupling their efforts to put capital controls on that money going out. So time will tell. I've always believed that the spring becomes the turning points. The condo market is pretty healthy in Vancouver, but the $5 million house has gone no bid. I drive to work and I see the same houses now with for sale signs for months, and I believe that everyone's holding off and quote until the spring. I'm not sure the spring is going to change any kind of China capital flows. It's always dangerous on bubbles when you say, oh, there's a reason. I'm building a spec house because there's a Chinese guy that will pay me $8 million for it. Well, if they're not there, who's going to pay the $8 million?
Nobody.
I think it's very dangerous, and I'm going to watch this very carefully, because when the housing market begins to really crumble, and we're not seeing it, housing starts despite a weak BC, despite a weak Alberta housing starts, which is really what we're talking about, is all the construction activity, are near still north of 200,000, which is, I mean, the U.S. went for 5 years of 2 million housing starts. We're now into year 14 of 200,000, which is just, the oversupply is just mind-boggling. We are at the highest level in history of Vancouver construction and Ontario construction. So, I mean, supply-demand, there's lots of supply. Don't think the old argument, oh, they're not building any more land. Well, they're building up at the highest pace in history. So anyway, good question, but I'm glad we clarified that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
One more question.
Definitely. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. There are no other questions.
Perfect. If you have a question or you think of one in a few minutes, give me an email, give me a call. I love talking about this stuff. So if not, we'll see how this year plays out. We'll do it again as in another quarter, or as the global news. I always do a conference call. If I sort of get 10 questions, 10 of the same questions on one day, I usually say time for a conference call. So, keep them coming, and we'll see you in a short while.